And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin.
And we've got a great show for you this week. I'm obviously still social distancing, recording from my home studio and all of that, but we're going to catch up on the news like we always do. We're going to go through the breaches of the week, just the highlights, because there has been a ton of breaches out there. But most importantly, what we're going to be doing today is talking about our deep dive, and that is a 6-year Russian misinformation campaign that you have never heard of. This goes above and beyond what we saw in 2016, and this is a fascinating look into the intelligence apparatus of Russia and what they are doing worldwide to influence governments and campaigns everywhere, not just in the United States. So don't miss this. Stick around, and as always, let's start with the news. And in cyber fraud news, we have some stats that are in from Scotland, and this should be basically concerning for all of us here. Now, this is coming by way of the BBC, but apparently 1 in 5 adults who use the internet said they have experienced cyber fraud or computer misuse, according to this report, which is by the Scottish Crime and Justice Survey. Now, here are some of the interesting results from basically this report. Now, the most common problem encountered was having a device infected by a virus, which makes a lot of sense because that happens all the time. Another big issue was having someone access online accounts for fraudulent purposes. Having a card or bank account detail stolen online was another major issue that they had. But about 4.5% of internet users said they have been the victim of a scam email. The issue, though, that we have, and I will get to that soon, I think is going to be with that 4.5%. But there is some good news, though, because most victims reported no impact on them, but they have changed their online behaviors as a result. Meaning, let's say they got their Facebook account hit and it was a bummer and it stunk, but they didn't lose any money. Now they're going to enable two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication, something I have talked about continuously on this radio show, and everybody should have this in their lives. So that is, I think, a change agent for good in that sense. It just stinks that somebody would have to go through that. But here's what's really concerning, though. For this report for the year of 2018 and 19, they found that the majority of victims did not actually report the incident to the police, which tells me that 4.5% number is probably extremely low. This was particularly true of scam phone calls and viruses. They just simply, nobody picked up and notified law enforcement. The only type of cyber fraud which was reported most by victims was online theft, basically of money, bank, whether it's a credit card, bank account information. Those were reported, which seems like it because it's directly impacting your economic future. But this is a concern. Most local police, regardless of the country, I don't care if it's Scotland or here in the United States, are ill-equipped to handle cyber anything, but they actually need to know and start tracking these types of behaviors. The more that law enforcement is able to track, the more accurate we can get in trying to track these criminals down or spot patterns of the attack, then we can then harden against. Now, this is true especially during the coronavirus pandemic, that attackers were not really using new techniques to hit us. They were using the same old ones they've always done, but they were just using the coronavirus or COVID-19 as the lure to get us to click on a link and all of these things. So I think where we need to go with this is actually some kind of international commission that law enforcement gets to plug into, where people can just simply go and fill out a form to say, hey, you know what? I got a virus. This is what happened. You know, let me upload a sample of the ransom note or whatever it is, or these very minor things, and make the bar for entry so low that it basically, you just click a button, it might send results, you know, something along those lines, so that we can start tracking this more effectively. Because the more information we get, the better we're simply going to be at identifying these kinds of crimes. And if most of this is going unreported, except for, let's say, loss of money, then we're really missing the boat here. And I think that's something that we need to really discuss, not just as a nation here in the United States, and I've got listeners all over the globe for this, so I don't care where you are, from here to Australia and all the way around the world, We all are in this together, and we are all seeing an increase in attacks, regardless of the country that you're living in. So this is an important thing I think worldwide we need to address, and I think that's the best way to do it. And so with that, those are your cyber fraud stats of the week, and hopefully, we can really start combating this at an international and cooperative level. And in Facebook news, and we have two sets of Facebook news for you today, because Facebook is turning up their fight against the coronavirus and rather misinformation by alerting you to old articles, but they're not doing enough. And that will lead us to the second article here. But let's start with these old articles that we are talking about before we get into where Facebook is really dropping the ball. So the first bit of news is that they are going to start alerting you to old articles. They said this a couple of weeks ago, that they are looking to add notifications about the source of coronavirus-related posts and will warn users when they share stories that are more than 90 days old. Now, the move basically aims to add more context to stories shared on Facebook and stems to seeks to stem the flow of misinformation. That's what I'm trying to say here. So for posts with links mentioning COVID-19, Facebook is considering, and I quote, a notification screen that provides information about the source of the link and directs people to the COVID-19 Information Center for authoritative health information. This is according to Facebook Vice President John Hegeman. And to continue with him, and I quote, to ensure people have the context they need to make informed decisions about what to share on Facebook, the notification screen will appear when people click the share button on articles older than 90 days, but will allow people to continue sharing if they decide an article is still relevant. Now, Hegeman said that Facebook's research has found, and I quote, that the timeliness of an article is an important piece of context that helps people decide what to read, trust, and share. And I 100% agree with that statement. Also, he said that some of the news organizations have complained that sharing of older stories purported to be current news, and I quote, can misconstrue the state of current events. And I actually think this is a good idea that Facebook has here. In a rapidly changing situation like the coronavirus, news and information about how it's spreading or medicine developments or even possible precautions to take can change even day to day. As we've seen, Texas is now starting to lock down. When you're listening to this, they may already be in lockdown, but as I'm sitting here talking initially here, they are in the process of closing things back down because now we have new information in Texas. Basically, their infection rate is increasing. And so here we go. And consider that the United States is seeing literally an increase, not just in Texas, but in other places as well. So we might be changing official recommendations for where you may live. I just recently learned as well that there are new symptoms that have been added officially to the CDC's website on the coronavirus, including, congestion, runny noses, diarrhea, and some other stuff that wasn't there. So sharing old articles may bring you out of date and may falsely think that you are safe when you may actually not be. I also did a video shortly after the pandemic started about studies showing that people were confused as to what their state official policies and recommendations were. So I think this makes total sense because, again, shifting information. But I don't think Facebook is going enough. I don't think they're going far enough with this because misinformation online, particularly on Facebook, and the others are still to blame as well, but we're talking about Facebook here, misinformation is getting people infected and killed. And this part of this news segment is coming from Newsweek because we're talking about here in the United States. Many states have mandated the use of face coverings in public spaces due to the possibility, obviously, of the spread of the coronavirus, and some individuals see wearing face masks as a violation of their civil liberties. I don't get political here, as you know, if you've been listening to me for a while. I think that cybersecurity and technology and all of this is agnostic to any political side of this. So I'm just prefacing that here because we're about to get, I think, into a bit of a political fight because someone decided to make a fake flyer that can be converted to a card size, like a wallet card size, and they put this online. Now, the one that has been circulating the most typically bears the Department of Justice's logo and states, and I quote, I am exempt from any ordinance requiring face mask usage in public. Wearing a face mask poses a mental and or physical risk to me. Under the Americans with Disability Act, or ADA, I am not required to disclose my condition to you. Now, depending on the card out there, and there is more than one circulating, although that is the major one that we're seeing, says something in the form of, and I quote again, any business or organization which denies access to an individual bearing the card will be reported to the FTBA for further actions. Now, FTBA stands for the Freedom to Breathe Agency, whose logo and website address also basically is on this card or flyer. And according to their website, the FTBA is, and I quote, a movement of proud American citizens who are dedicated to protecting their freedom and liberty. Now, a Facebook link on the FTBA website led to a group page, and according to the group's history, FTBA was previously known as the Anti-Mask Task Force, and this Facebook group has been in existence since the beginning of June of 2020. Now, their site and group page make demonstrably false assertions on masks causing possible organ failures due to a lack of oxygen being delivered through the mask to your body, and obviously tell that to any surgeon who spends, you know, hours and hours in a mask in the ER and operating rooms and doesn't pass out or get brain damage, not to mention people like painters who are in masks all the time, specifically the N95 masks that filter out particles. They work all day in these and nobody is dying or having problems. They also explain, though, on their website, the FTBA, and on the Facebook group, that wearing a face mask is, and I quote, a psychological anchor for suppression, enslavement, and cognitive obedience. How long before your human farmers trick you into believing that it is better you stop breathing altogether as to stop the spread of a virus? This is what they are putting out there, and whether you believe them or not, here we go. This is technically misinformation because this card has no legal standings or bearings if, let's say, a law enforcement officer stops you or you're asked to leave a store, because the guidelines, depending on the state, so for where I live, you know, just in the Chicagoland area in Illinois, the state is requiring us to wear masks when we go out to, let's say, a supermarket or a pharmacy or wherever we're going. And I think it's just common courtesy. I don't know, you know, who is going to be around me that has, let's say, ailments that might make the coronavirus 1,000 times worse or deadly for them, whereas I may not necessarily be worried about myself, but I'm trying to keep other people safe. And if we're all wearing masks, that helps. But this is misinformation that Facebook allows to proliferate on their platform. And by virtue of that, it is an instant free platform to get thousands of people on board with something and then spread, literally, as I said before, demonstrably false information. So this is something that Facebook really needs to take seriously. And I hope that as they are addressing these things, they maybe take the Twitter route that starts putting on, putting up a link that says, hey, this is demonstrably false information. You know, please check out other sources on this, you know, to validate what you think or believe and all of that. And I think that's an important thing. So there you go. That is Facebook, how they are combating the coronavirus and not, all in one breath, basically. And I think it's a mixed bag. But either way, Facebook has some serious, serious problems. And we're now seeing that come to fruition because a lot of advertisers are now starting to drop Facebook. And Mark Zuckerberg, I heard, again, as of me talking about this, was down $7 billion in personal wealth when Verizon decided to pull out and other massive corporations from advertising there. And so we will see if that social economic pressure really has them up their game, because Mark Zuckerberg, and I've talked about this before, really doesn't have a lot of empathy. And so if you hit him in the pocketbook, he actually listens. And there you go. So that is your Facebook news of the week.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you, or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me, and I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin.
And the last couple of weeks in data breaches has been absolutely off the rails bonkers. And there has been some breaches that have shown up in the last couple of weeks that I think I'm going to be reporting on for literally months as a lot of different organizations start reporting that they've been hit. Now, before I begin, I'd like to thank the following people that sent me messages, linked to me, tagged me, emailed me, whatever it was to get me a lot of this information. It is always, always, always helps me out. And that would be David Walker, Jason Dance, Chris Fellon, and Jacqueline Wolf. And I cannot thank you enough. And please keep sending those tips. Now, with that, let's get going. Because if you use any of these following dating apps, and you know who you are, and this is going to be interesting, but if you use any of these dating apps, Threesomes, Cougary, Gay Daddy Bear, X-Pal, BBW Dating, Casual X, Sugar D, Herpes Dating, and G-Hunt, and I am speculating on what that one is, you might have a problem. Because security researchers were scanning the open internet on May 24th when they stumbled upon a collection of publicly accessible, basically Amazon Web Services hosted databases. Now, each one of these contained data from the dating apps that I just mentioned, and this information was particularly sensitive and included very explicit photos and audio recordings. The researcher also found screenshots of private chats from other platforms, as well as receipt for payments sent between users within the some of these apps, as I'm guessing part of their relationship building. And so this exposed data included a limited amount of personally identifiable information like real names, birthdays, or email addresses. The researchers are obviously warning that any motivated criminal hacker could also take these photos and the recordings and everything else and start blackmailing people, because you can tie it to a real name and an email address, and that is a terrifying prospect for anybody using one of those dating apps. And if you are, heads up to you, you might want to stop. Moving on. Let's talk about Delivery Hero. This is an online food delivery service, and they confirmed a data breach of their Foodora brand. Now, the breach information comes from 14 countries, which includes the personal details for about 727,000 accounts. We're talking names, addresses, phone numbers, hashed passwords, and it also contains latitude and longitude coordinates to 6 decimal points, which is really accurate, to within a few inches or so, and they're saying no financial data was leaked, and I'm guessing those latitude and longitude coordinates are your homes. This data was posted on May 19th in a well-known dark web forum for leaking stolen information, so heads up if you use Foodora by Delivery Hero. Moving on, let's talk about Claire's. We used to see them in shopping malls all the time. They do like jewelry and accessories and stuff like that, I believe, for women. They closed 3,000 physical retail locations on March 20th in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. But an analysis from Sansec Threat Research shows that basically a Magecart group, this is a group that breaks in to try to hit online payment sessions, saw an opportunity basically to harvest payment card data in these closures. And so they hit Claire's. And because a Magecart credit card skimmer was basically used to attack online customers of Claire's for about a month and a half. Claire's has obviously fixed that. But if you have shopped at Claire's since March 20th, you might want to check your credit card statements, because Claire's got hit, and their information got dumped, or rather credit card information got dumped from their users. Moving on, let's head on over to Austria and talk about A1 Telekom. Now, A1 is Austria's largest internet service provider, and they admitted to suffering a malware infection in November of 2019. A1 said its security team detected the malware about a month later, but removing the infection was actually more problematic than they had initially anticipated. And so from December 2019 to May of 2020, A1 says that its security team has actually been battling with the malware operators in an attempt to remove all of the backdoor components and everything else and eject them from the network. Now, A1 didn't disclose the nature of the malware, and it didn't say if the intruders were financially focused like a cyber crime gang, or if this was a nation-state hacking group like Russia or China, et cetera. So heads up if you use A1 Telekom in Austria. Moving on, let's head on down to India. and talk about Indian Blood Donors. This is a nonprofit organization that maintains a database of blood donors and matches recipients with the nearest suitable donor. And they got hit for personal data with more than 12,000 Indian blood donors. And this information was being offered essentially on the internet for free. The information had the blood donor's name, phone number, email address, as well as their blood type, PIN code, and password. And this was all in plain text, so everybody could read it. So heads up if you are a member of Indian Blood Donors. Moving on, let's talk about DraftKings. This is the online sports betting outfit, I guess. DraftKings disclosed in an SEC filing that SB Tech, who they merged with in April of this year, was hit with a ransomware attack at the end of March of 2020. And so this filing does not state what the ransomware was or who conducted the attack and on, but heads up, if you use SB Tech, they might have gotten you hit, or if you use DraftKings, depending on how they're sharing technology, that may be an issue for you as well. Again, moving on, let's talk about Chrome browser extensions. A ton of Chrome browser extensions, because browser extensions that have been downloaded almost 33 million times from Google's Chrome Web Store were converting taking highly sensitive user information and sending it out. This was found by a group called, and I'm totally missing my notes here, but I'll keep moving on. We'll get to that. But this really underscores, I think, the lax security measures that continue essentially to put internet users at risk when they're using these kinds of extensions. Now, the extensions, which Google removed only after being notified by them, actively siphon data such as screenshots, content in device clipboards, browser cookies to log into websites, and keystrokes such as passwords. And that is a very serious issue. And this is coming from Awake Security. That's the name I could not remember. It's further down in my notes. Now, many of these extensions were modular, meaning that once they installed, they updated themselves with executable files, which in many cases were specific to the operating system they ran on. Awake Security provided additional details in their report as well. And company researchers found that all 111 of their extensions that they identified as malicious were connected to internet domains registered through an Israel-based hosting provider called Galcom. The researchers eventually found more than 15,000 registered through Galcom hosting malicious or suspicious behavior. The malicious domains used a variety of evasion techniques to avoid being labeled as malicious by security products. So heads up, you might want to check out that report by Awake Security. If you're an avid user of Google Chrome and install browser extensions, you might be one of the 33 million users that got hit by this. Moving on, we're going to be talking about a company called DigiZRT, just known as Digi. This is a Hungarian provider of various electronic communication and services and television to more than 800,000 households within the country of Hungary. Now, in September 2019, an ethical hacker reported a security vulnerability to Digi. The vulnerability concerned their website running on a popular open source content management platform, and in particular was exposing two databases. Now, the first database was a test database of subscribers, which was created for troubleshooting purposes years before, and this database also contained identification data on system administrators, which resulted in obviously existing security or additional security risks, because if you've got administrator use, you can phish them, you can hit them if the passwords were there. That's a very serious issue. The second database contained the name and email addresses of subscribers to Digi's email newsletter, and so that contained things like email addresses, telephone numbers, bank account numbers, and all of this. The personal data in the database was not encrypted, and so the authorities concluded that the database could have been used for identity theft. And by virtue of this, and they now have the largest fine that the GDPR in the European Union has leveled. And they had a $290,000 euro fine, which is about $235,000 US. So with that, moving on, let's talk about cosmetic giant Avon. Avon calling, I think I remember the commercials from when I was a kid. The company has filed documents with the SEC disclosing an incident on June 9th, a day after the company first discovered issues with some of its IT infrastructure. The company said the incident, and I quote, interrupted some systems and partially affected operations. Now, details about the nature of the cyber attack are basically not being disclosed at this moment by Avon, but in a second document filed with the SEC, on June 12th, Avon promised to restore some of its affected systems and impacted markets, during that particular week of June 12th. So we'll see what happens, but heads up, Avon users and customers and, I guess, franchise owners. So with that, let's keep going on, because we're going to be talking about Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, which is Ohio's government department, which is basically overseeing this specific type of unemployment. Now, Cleveland attorney Mark Dan filed a civil lawsuit in Cuyahoga County against Deloitte Consulting, which is under contract with the Ohio Department of Jobs and Family Services, to develop the system to administer the Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program. Now, they reported a recent incident that allowed the Unemployment Assistance Program applicants to view other applicants' names, such as social security numbers and street addresses and on and on. And although they say only 24 people were impacted by this issue and it was fixed within an hour, the lawsuit alleges that tens of thousands of applicants could be part of this class action, since it has been reported that as many as 161,000 Ohioans have applied for this assistance. And I think this is part of the greater SBA issue that many states, Arkansas, Kentucky, Illinois, just off the top of my head, has this problem as well, that applicants, let's say in Illinois, could see other Illinois applicants, just as Kentuckians could see other Kentuckians, and on. So Ohio is now joining those ranks, and here come the lawsuits. Moving on, let's talk about the Order of Engineers of Quebec. Now, bear with me, because this is actually, I had to use Google Translate on this one, because this article was sent to me in French, and I do not speak French, and I apologize for any French speakers out there if I butcher any of this. But basically, the personal information of 1,756 members and candidates for the engineering profession may have been affected by a breach of computer security. Again, Google Translate. The incident occurred, and I quote, due to a flaw in the transactional software of an external supplier of the Orders of Engineers. So basically what it's sounding like is they had a credit card transactional database hit, probably from like a Mage card, where they were stealing credit card information. So heads up to my listeners in Quebec, if you are a member of the Order of Engineers or affiliated, you might have an issue. Moving on, let's talk about IT services giant Cognizant. They stated that unencrypted data was most likely accessed and stolen during a Maze ransomware attack in April. Apparently on April 17th, Cognizant began emailing their clients to warn them that they were under attack by Maze ransomware so that they could disconnect themselves from Cognizant and protect themselves from being affected. That's not good, because Cognizant offers cybersecurity services as well. And so hopefully they'll get that straightened out.
And stay tuned. Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show. As we take a quick break for a public service announcement, we'll be back right after that.